From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. After many months of criticism over 9/11 and missing weapons of mass destruction, and 5 months before his boss, George Bush, stands for re-election, CIA Director George Tenet resigned today.
Today I share with you the news that I gave the president last evening. I've decided to step down as Director of Central Intelligence, effective July 11th, the 7th anniversary of my being sworn in as DCI.
The announcement, surprisingly, came this morning. It was first made by President Bush in the Rose Garden. It set off a wave of speculation about exactly why Tenet is going. Tonight on Point, the resignation of George Tenet and the backstory in Washington. We begin in the Capitol, where the president announced his acceptance of the Tenet resignation early today in what appeared to be an awkward afterthought following a press conference with Prime Minister John Howard of Australia. The president praised Tenet for his service, saying he had done a superb job for the American people.
He has been a strong and able leader at the agency. He's been a strong leader in the war on terror. And I will miss him.
And then the president turned and walked away. Walter Pincus covers national security affairs for the Washington Post and joins us now. Walter, how is this big resignation of the CIA chief being interpreted in Washington today?
Well, you pay your money and you take your choice. People are speculating all over the place. And of course, when a public servant who has been both praised by the president and under fire by his critics, resigns saying it's a family problem, he wants to deal with his family, nobody believes him. But I think a little bit I know about George Tenet is, in his case, it may be true. He's been trying to leave since last October.
Does George Tenet have some particular family problem that is known in Washington that needs addressing, or is it being interpreted as just a general desire, if indeed that's what it is, to be with the wife and kids?
Well, it could be as simple as he felt this is the time he could leave. His son is about to become a senior in high school who he hasn't spent much time with the last 11 years, and this is the time they go off looking at colleges, and he wanted to be the one who took him. He was just coming back from vacation. I think he's been thinking it over. A friend of mine was in a meeting with him last week and was pressing him as to, is he thinking to quitting? And he turned to this person and said, you must be talking to my wife. I think there was a sense that he wanted to get out. I think there's another underlying sense, and that is the war in Iraq and the intelligence that led to it is bound to be an issue in the political campaign. It's certainly going to draw criticism from two reports from the Senate and House Committee and the 9/11 Commission. And I think George Tenet didn't want himself and the agency to be central in a political campaign.
So a potential confluence of interests here, family and political.
In Washington, it's always that way. There never is a single reason for anybody doing something major.
So how do you interpret this in terms of how it hits President Bush? Is it a blow for him, or is it an advantage that George Tenet can walk away July 11th and perhaps, from President Bush's point of view, take with him a lot of the of the arrows of criticism that have been flying all over the place in Washington?
Well, I think in a certain case, that's certainly a possibility. I think the Democrats have already made clear that they believe Tenet is certainly not the sole person who should leave based on what they consider the mistake of going into Iraq and the problems that are developed in Iraq by the administration being unprepared for the aftermath. So I doubt if they're going to stop with George Tenet. I think you'll see focusing on Defense Secretary Rumsfeld next.
Now, there are a couple of big reports coming out just in the next few weeks that are expected to be highly critical of the CIA. Is that not right? From the 9/11 Commission and from the Senate Investigating Committee?
Yeah, they all will be coming out. Tenet said to a friend recently, when it was raised that possibly he would resign, because of the criticism, he's supposed to have said a piece of paper, meaning a report, is not going to chase him from his job. His feeling is that he's been criticized before, and he certainly expects the criticism. He's read the report, so he knows what's coming.
Is there an element of preemptive resignation here, perhaps, Walter Pincus, that no one's going to make me do it, I'll do it myself?
I think, well, as I said before, I think he's been looking for an opening. He's been talked out of it by the president before. The president didn't talk him out of it this time. He's leaving on the anniversary of his 7th year as head of the agency in the intelligence community, really second only to Alan Dulles. And he believes he's left a good legacy.
How does Washington see his report card overall? 9/11, the missing WMD, these have to be huge negatives. What about the positives?
Well, I think the positives are that he inherited an agency that was, he described as being in a trough in 1997. One of the examples he uses is at when he came in as director, there were only 12 case officers taking training to go out and train agents and run agents.
For the world.
Now they're graduating the biggest class they ever had.
How big will that be, Walter, do you know?
Well, it's in the hundreds. They don't give out the number, but they've been turning them out, and recruiting has gone well. He's got a lot of money. He feels the agency is on the rise. But he said in testimony before the commission that it's going to take another 5 years to really reach where they ought to be.
Did George Tenet feel that he'd been given the resources to remake the CIA? There's been a lot of talk that it was underfunded and sort of sidetracked after the end of the Cold War. Did he end up feeling that he'd been treated right by Congress and by presidential budgets?
Well, I think the 9/11 Commission is going to point out that almost nobody was prepared to fight the war on terrorism the way it has to be fought before that attack. And since that attack, the country's been mobilized and they've given the funds. I mean, the money going to the intelligence community has gone way up. But you don't just turn the intelligence community around in a day. It takes years to train people to be able to carry out spying in an area like the Middle East. You have to have language experts. You have to have people. You no longer can run your intelligence agency from out of embassies, as they did in the Cold War, and try to recruit people at cocktail parties. Terrorists don't hang out at cocktail parties, and they don't go to embassy parties, and you can't deal with them if you're, quote, undercover in a foreign country as a political officer in the embassy.
Put yourself in the shoes of the crowd at Langley today, Walter Pincus, the CIA employees listening to George Tenet announce that he would be going. How do you think that news will be received there? Has he been a respected, admired, loved leader there, or seen as someone who rolled over to defense intelligence agencies, to political agendas outside the realm of intelligence?
Well, there are people who have all those opinions, but I think one of the things he was able to do, he came in, you have to remember, with the professionals in the intelligence community thinking of him as a Senate staffer with no experience and was just there to fill a seat. And I think he's earned the respect of a lot of people. There are feelings that in his acceptance and allowing of the WMD report in October, he was going a little overboard in following what Vice President Cheney and others had said publicly about the threat from Saddam Hussein and his weapons, and in that case, perhaps it was a little too political. But I think he points out, look what they've done with no terrorist attacks in the United States since that time. Two-thirds of al-Qaeda picked up. The success in getting Libya to drop its weapons of mass destruction, primarily because we knew so much about it, and also the sort of ending of Dr. A.Q. Khan's nuclear proliferation. He sees those as successes and recognizes and has recognized the failures.
But at the same time, the recent warnings from John Ashcroft that we may be hit and hit hard this summer, and the sort of note struck on that announcement day that there wasn't much we could do about it. Walter Pincus, finally, what about this odd announcement of President Bush's this morning in the Rose Garden? He had spoken with the Australian Prime Minister, walked away, and then came back to make this quick announcement, and then off again. Were you there? How are people interpreting that?
No, I wasn't there. Nobody expected it. I think we'll be reporting tomorrow that he surprised the president last night when he first told him he was resigning. The president wasn't prepared for it. It was held as a secret, and I think the president just decided he wanted to do it and get it over with before it leaked, because it was bound to leak. And that seemed to be, he didn't want to do it, I think, when he was accompanied by the Australian Prime Minister. And since he was taking off on a plane, you know, it was questionable how else he could have done it.
So there it was, announced, and the president off to Europe. Walter Pincus, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
You're welcome.
Walter Pincus is National Security Affairs reporter for The Washington Post. He spoke with me from Washington. We're talking tonight about the resignation of George Tenet, director of the CIA, and the Washington backstory to his departure. How do you interpret the resignation of Director Tenet? Why now? Is this a stand-up guy, a fall guy? Who's driving American intelligence today? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Washington is Robert Baer, who served as CIA case officer for over 20 years and is author of See No Evil, The True Story of a Ground Soldier in the CIA's War on Terrorism. Good evening and welcome, Robert Baer.
Good evening. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Robert Baer, you've worked inside the CIA for a long time. How was George Tenet received when he arrived? How's he seen as he goes?
He was an unknown quantity when he came in. He'd been a staffer on the Hill for a long time, and then he was the National Security Council. He'd been very supportive of the CIA inside the National Security Council. I knew him from then. I went to college with him as well, but I knew him from then. He was very supportive, and he took over from Tony Lake, who was supposed to be CIA director.
Right.
And he spent a lot of time getting to know the people inside the CIA, and I think was pretty well liked, was trying to bring the morale back after John Deutsch, who had been very critical of the CIA when he was director during the Clinton years.
Do you see George Tenet going as a scapegoat, as a fall guy, as a family man? How do you interpret it, Robert Baer?
Coincidentally, the same day that he had appeared before Congress in front of the 9/11 Commission, he had dinner with a friend of mine at the CIA, and I saw him the next day, and he said that George Tenet said, "I've had it with this place." You know, he was tired of the criticism. He knew the CIA was going to come in for an important hit on 9/11, as well as weapons of mass destruction. I think he got tired. He had a very rough ride. Aside from that, if I were sitting in the White House now and had to apportion blame for Iraq, if it goes bad between now and November, a convenient scapegoat is the CIA. I think at least in the back of Tenet's mind, he was thinking this. And he said, "Do I want to sit through this? Is I get attacked by my own boss?" Washington is a nasty place, and Tenet knows that.
And he saw the ducks lining up against him, you're saying. He would be the most likely target if they had to attack one of their own.
It'd have to be. I mean, you can't blame this on Ahmad Chalabi, the head of the Iraqi National Congress, who passed us bad information. You can't blame this on a foreigner. It has to be somebody inside, somebody with power. We saw this in the Bob Woodward book Tenet's quoted as saying it's a slam dunk that Saddam has weapons of mass destruction.
Right.
We saw this setting in, and Tenet knows how vicious Washington can be.
So he saw it coming at him. But yet the president sat every morning with this man, we're told, Robert Baer, for a daily briefing. They appeared to have a pretty strong bond.
They had a fabulous relationship. They talked sports. They knew each other's families. Tenet went up to Camp David a lot. Tenet's very easy to get along with. He's somebody you want to relax with, you know, have a beer with, whatever. But, you know, political reality being what it is, and, you know, Karl Rove is sitting there and said, "I got to get this guy in the White House again in November." And he looked around, and there was Tenet.
And off goes George Tenet. Robert Baer, stick with us. There's a lot more we want to learn. We're talking tonight about the resignation of George Tenet and the backstory in Washington. How do you interpret the sudden resignation of the CIA director? Why now? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the resignation of CIA Director George Tenet and the backstory to that resignation in Washington, D.C., and perhaps beyond. You can join our conversation tonight. Is this resignation overdue, a late payment for 9/11, no WMD, no bin Laden? Or is George Tenet being made the fall guy, the barge the White House hopes will carry away bad news? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I've been joined from Washington by Robert Baer, CIA case officer and the director of operations from 1976 to 1997. He served in the Middle East, including work in Iraq and Lebanon. He's author of See No Evil, the true story of a ground soldier in the CIA's war on terrorism. We're joined also from Washington now by Robert Dreyfus, Washington freelance journalist, contributing editor for The Nation, The American Prospect, and Mother Jones. Good evening and welcome, Robert Dreyfus.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
It's great to have you. You've been watching the intelligence agency and agencies for a long, long time now. How do you look at this dramatic announcement today, a surprise announcement in spite of all the trouble stacking up for George Tenet and the CIA? How do you interpret what has happened here, Robert Dreyfus?
Well, the only surprise to me is that Tenet didn't quit a long time ago. I see him as kind of a tragic figure with a tragic flaw, but that doesn't let him off the hook because he essentially caved in. He took the political hit. Most of the professionals in the intelligence community at State Department, at the CIA, at the Defense Intelligence Agency disagreed with the Iraq war policy on broad grounds, but also on the specific grounds that they didn't think that Saddam Hussein was a threat, and they did not think that Saddam had significant quantities of weapons of mass destruction. Tenet, being a politician, he's not an intelligence specialist. He's a Hill staffer, a glorified Hill staffer, who took over a suffering agency that had had several bad directors in a row, including Woolsey and Deutsch. He took over this agency, and he became the point man in the Bush administration for politicizing the intelligence agency's conclusions. He signed off on some, to call them faulty conclusions is an understatement, catastrophically wrong conclusions, which not only led us into war, which have now probably for the next 25 years ruined our reputation overseas. Nobody is going to believe us when we go overseas and say we've learned this or that. They're going to say, you know, did Ahmad Shalabi tell you that too?
You're saying so, in politicizing CIA conclusions, you're saying he took the straight-up intelligence reports and bent them or turned them to serve a political agenda, an ideological agenda?
Not only did he bend them, he completely distorted the conclusions of the professionals in the intelligence community about Iraq. And then he sat behind Colin Powell at the United Nations when Colin Powell gave that unbelievably misleading, I almost want to say lie-filled presentation to the United Nations Security Council.
That he's been complaining about even lately, saying, hey, why was I given this bad info?
Yeah, well, Tenet sat right over his right shoulder, stone-faced. And I talked to a lot of intelligence people at the time who said, that was the moment that they knew that Tenet had betrayed them. And there's a lot of anger in the, not so much among the munchkins at the CIA, but among the people who were kind of in the middle and upper ranks who feel that Tenet took very nuanced information about Iraq's weapons programs and just signed off on this silly slam dunk notion. And went along with the neoconservative hardliners, the Richard Perl mafia,
and clearly
who has been lambasting the CIA for the last 5 years on this issue.
And clearly that did not pan out. But yet there's been such a range of reaction today, and some of it from unexpected quarters. Robert Dreyfus, Robert Baer, if you stand by for just a second, among those reacting to the news of the resignation today was retired Marine four-star general Anthony Zinni. Zinni worked closely with Tenet as special envoy for President Bush in the Middle East. I spoke with him earlier today. He's been a harsh critic of the Bush administration, but General Zinni was all praise today for George Tenet.
I'm sad to see George go. I have the greatest respect for him, and personally, I like him very much. In my time as the commander of U.S. Central Command, George served me and the others extremely well. He was tireless in his efforts to give us the best support and to constantly ensure that we were satisfied with what we were getting. He's been a great servant of this country. Unfortunately, this situation and the intelligence now has created his resignation, and I feel badly about that. I think the United States is losing a truly great person that wanted to do the very best for his country.
Retired Marine General Anthony Zinni speaking with me earlier today from Washington. You can hear my full interview with Zinni this coming Monday evening, June 7th at 8 o'clock. But Robert Baer, how do you square this circle? On the one hand, this strong criticism from Robert Dreyfus and that he's carrying from others saying this CIA director politicized the very product, the core work of his agency. On the other, a guy like General Zinni, who's not easy on this administration, saying this was a great guy.
I'm going to side with Robert Dreyfus on this. This is like the captain of the Titanic, you know, keeps on losing the Titanic and giving another boat with all these failures. And what happened on weapons of mass destruction is the CIA went in with a very original, very weak national intelligence estimate saying, you know, we don't really know about the weapons of mass destruction. And Dick Cheney set it back and said, do better. And then you had Richard Perle saying, you know, I told you all along we should have competitive intelligence. The CIA is weak on Saddam. It likes the guy. It supported him in the 80s during the Iran-Iraq War, which isn't exactly true. And it hates Ahmad Chalabi, our favorite guy. It broke with him. The CIA is pro-Saddam. And they kept on beating on the analysts and Tenet until they changed the NIE. Now, it's easy for us to all say, well, we know what we'd do. We would resign then and say, we don't agree with the war. And General Zinni certainly is a courageous, you know, critic of this administration. But on the other hand, he doesn't understand intelligence. He's a combat officer.
So you're saying he may not get exactly the bait and switch that went on here, if that's what it was.
Everybody likes – I like Tenet. Tenet was – I know the guy went to school with him. He's very personable. He's a politician. He's very good. He's got a nice touch. But that doesn't make him good at evaluating intelligence and doing the right thing, running it into a disastrous war like this.
Robert Dreyfus, paint the picture for us behind the facade, behind the formal picture we have of George Tenet. What about his relationship with the Pentagon, with the neoconservatives, with Ahmad Chalabi, for that matter? How did these intersect?
Well, I think Tenet, you know, was because he's a politician and was running a bureaucracy as much as an agency, he was caught in the middle, and he was simply outflanked and outfoxed and outpressured by this little phalanx of hardliners in the administration who were intent on going to war, and who I believe, by the way, knew that this weapons of mass destruction issue was just a ploy, really. I mean, they wanted to go to war for other reasons that had nothing to do with WMD or Iraq's supposed ties to terrorism. It had to do with Israel and oil and global strategy and so forth. And so under that pressure, Tenet broke. He caved. And that's why it's almost Shakespearean in terms of the tragic flaw. I don't know if his only choice was to resign. I agree with Bob Baer that was one choice. He also, however, could have put up perhaps a slightly stronger bureaucratic fight and enlisted the Secretary of State. This was all happening at a time when the war was still up for grabs. You know, Colin Powell was at the UN, and there was a lot of talk about the inspections and letting this continue. And
right.
It wasn't completely out of the question that a strong statement from Tenet in conjunction with Powell could have slowed this train or even, you know, pushed it off the track at that point.
Robert Baer, do you agree? Would a CIA director have had the leverage, the power to turn aside this drive toward war?
I think so. I think if he'd walked out the door and said, this is nonsense, we can't support this war with the intelligence, that might have just slowed this war down enough to at least postpone it and give, you know, more of a chance to the UN inspectors. It might have. I mean, anything, that would be the principal thing to do. That's the point. I mean, you know, this is a Cincinnatus thing where when things are going wrong, you walk away and you come back when you're needed again.
But here we hear Robert Dreyfus describing it as a kind of Shakespearean tragedy where the one who was rolled, as you guys describe it, ends up being also the one who resigns.
Oh, it is very much. I mean, he wanted to be liked. Tenet wanted to be liked by the CIA employees, by the people that worked for him. He wanted to be liked by the president and Congress all at once. And at the end of the day, he's the guy that gets sacrificed for this war.
Eric, I want to invite our callers in, Mr. Dreyfus and Bear. There are a lot of them waiting to get in. Eric is calling from Drummond, Wisconsin. Hi, Eric. You're on the air.
Well, thank you very much. And sure. I always enjoy your program,
thank
by
you.
The way, Tom.
Thank
it's a great one. I have little to say beyond that, what your guests are. I agree with them that he was outflanked, outfoxed, outmaneuvered, that this is a Shakespearean tragedy. The particular question that I have, well, in addition, I think it might be said that there are others who might well have resigned much, much sooner, and we could name them. They are that phalanx of Bush's mentors. But a question that I've had during this period of questioning the motives, what Chalabi has been doing, is he as well a fall guy for the Bush administration's failure? And is this another distraction from the fact, as your guests have said, that the Bush administration, Bush and his minions have wanted this war from the outset, and we are being distracted, somebody else to blame for the failure?
There's an interesting question, Eric. Thanks for raising it. Robert Baer, how about it? Ahmed Chalabi was just today attacking George Tenet, saying he was the one to blame for false information about WMD.
Isn't that the silliest thing you've ever heard?
It's amazing.
It's supposedly conducting a vendetta against Chalabi and resigns in the middle of it? Come on. And you know, the justice referral on this leak was done by the National Security Agency.
This is the leak on the Iranian code.
That was done. And it was, so in effect, it was done by the Pentagon itself, investigating itself. So this whole thing about notion that that Chalabi and Tenet are fighting in this, you know, this heroic struggle, it's just nonsense.
But what about Eric's question, Eric's suggestion that is Chalabi himself being set up, you know, being cut off and set up as the fall guy here? Or do you believe he was, in fact, this kind of bad seed in this whole picture who delivered up the information? Or was he just a useful guy who would say what needed to be said?
He was feeding the disinformation to a ready audience in Washington. The information was poorly sourced. I used to meet Chalabi in northern Iraq when I was assigned there, and we just laugh about it, that he didn't have any intelligence. So, I mean, we all knew that in the CIA, but then he comes to Washington and goes through Congress and lobbyists and these right-wing institutes, and he's resurrected like the phoenix. I think he thought it was funny that people believed him. The problem was the willing audience here in Washington.
And the audience was stand up, ready, and willing. I want to welcome to our conversation from New York, Mark Riebling. He's editorial director at the Manhattan Institute for Policy Research, author of Wedge, From Pearl Harbor to 9/11, How the Secret War Between the CIA and FBI Has Endangered National Security. Good evening and welcome, Mark Riebling.
Good evening.
How do you interpret what has happened today with George Tenet, Mark Riebling? You've been a sharp critic from the conservative side of this CIA director. What do you make of what's gone down today?
Well, I certainly think it's long overdue. In a sense, I think it's unfortunate because you're going to have problems in transition and continuity. And, you know, on his report card, I do give him two A's in two of his different subjects. I mean, I give him an A on cooperating with Congress and charming Congress. And I also give him an A on working with the White House and getting the access to the president that, you know, truly a director of Central Intelligence needs. But in his other areas, I think, you know, I'd say six other areas, he gets an F. And preventing strategic surprise, which is sort of the Pearl Harbor question.
That is the 9/11 question here.
Yeah, the 9/11 question. He gets an F on that. And national intelligence estimates, well, there was no national intelligence estimate on terrorism since 1997. F. You know, cooperating with the FBI, the fact that the two al-Qaeda operatives came from a meeting in Malaysia and the CIA knew about it. They came to the United States. The FBI wasn't told. F. Sending off the Pentagon, traditionally, which is the big, you know, 800-pound gorilla in the room, the Pentagon definitely gained ground on the CIA in terms of its hegemony in the intelligence community during Tenet's term. So I give him an F on that, too. Protecting sources and methods. Here's something that Tenet did a bad job of even before he became CIA director, going back to May 1994 when he was in the Security Council. He was the author of Presidential Decision Directive 24, which, as Bob Baer can tell you, put the FBI essentially in charge of counterintelligence within the CIA, and I believe really led to a landslide in terms of pushing down really hard on the law enforcement side of the equation, or the seesaw, if you will, in which really led to a lot of the problems and failures, I think, that led to 9/11, because the FBI was really the one running threat assessments in this country. So an F on that. And then finally, in terms of implementing his own vision for change, you know, changing with the times, I see him as a follower, as a guy who adapted perfectly well under Clinton and Bush and really had no problems getting along with either team. There's a strength in that, but there's also a weakness. You're going to rely upon the leadership from the top, but I don't think either White House, Clinton or Bush, led, and I think Tenet just followed.
Too much go along, get along. And Mark Riebling, what about, from your conservative perspective, the picture that's been drawn for us by Bob Baer and Robert Dreyfus of George Tenet as having been outflanked, outfoxed, outpressured by a neoconservative group that wanted to go to war in Iraq and simply needed an intelligence kind of laying on of hands to sanction it?
I don't dispute that. What I would dispute is that this is somehow new in the intelligence community. I think it's been endemic since about 1973, where the devil's advocate was taken out of the process. The CIA counterintelligence staff under James Angleton was essentially decentralized and stripped down. And so essentially out in the field, a lot of times these case officers are their own counterintelligence officers. They're vetting their own intelligence, checking their own work. And there is no one really to say no or to hold up the process, which sometimes you need to do and say we shouldn't let this into the intellectual food chain. And I think the reductio ad absurdum of this is when you get Colin Powell presenting to the United Nations intelligence, which probably came from Chalabi's people via German intelligence about mobile weapons labs, which no one has really checked. And I think, you know, under the old system, yeah, that would have been held up and that was unpopular because people would think you're paranoid if you suspect deception. But you know what? Deception happens. And no matter how many satellites we have and how many code-breaking operations we have, people are going to feed us bad intelligence. And if we don't have the proper skepticism, then we're going to be taken for a ride. And I think clearly in this case we were.
But if the intelligence apparatus is ready to be taken for a ride, if it's willing to be turned to political ends too easily, who's going to put that genie back in the bottle? I suppose most presidents would say, well, fine, we'll stick with that dynamic.
Well, you know, you hit the $64,000 question. The problem is it's human nature, and to be deceived, you have to want to be deceived. And the way people usually get deceived is because people tell them what they want to hear, not what they need to know. And so I think that this is what clearly happened with the Iraqi exiles feeding a lot of these Pentagon hardliners horror stories about Iraq. I think actually Iranian intelligence probably perpetuated a lot of this because Iraq had always been a rival to them in that part of the world. And I think they're happy now that Saddam is gone because they can fill the vacuum. I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but I think that's something that's probably going to unravel as we go along.
This is quite a picture, Mark Riebling. Thanks for joining and sharing with us.
Thank you.
Mark Riebling, editorial director at the Manhattan Institute for Policy Research. Robert Baer, Robert Dreyfus, please stand by. We've got to take a short break. We're talking tonight about the resignation of George Tenet and the backstory in Washington. What personal reasons would be enough to demand the jump now, not 5 months from now, after the election? And can George Bush now claim a clean slate on intelligence? Do the failures go away with George Tenet? We're at 1-800-423-8255. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the resignation today of George Tenet and the backstory to that resignation in Washington, D.C. We're joined tonight from Washington by Robert Baer, longtime CIA case officer and author of See No Evil, and Robert Dreyfus, contributing editor for The Nation, The American Prospect, and Mother Jones. You can join this conversation as well. How do you interpret the sudden resignation of George Tenet? Who is driving American intelligence now? The CIA? The Pentagon? Anybody? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. David's calling from Wayland, Massachusetts. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Oh, what a pleasure to be on the air. I really enjoyed the show, and I enjoy this particular night show.
Great to have you, David. What's on your mind?
I cut out a picture of George Tenet that was on the front page of the New York Times that pretty much said it all. A picture is worth a thousand words.
And when was this taken, David?
I'm going to think it was about the time that it became obvious that the weapons of mass destruction scenario was pretty much a fake.
A bust,
and
a no-show. Yeah. And what did you see in that photograph?
I saw somebody who was fully within a scam, who was disgusted about his participation in it. And I remember sending it to friends and family and saying, this picture pretty much says it all. And I remember seeing the same kind of face on Tenet during Colin Powell's speech. And, you know, I look back on it. I remember that the original report, estimate CIA report on the threat posed by Iraq, which was published in October of 2002, I believe, and I remember reading that and listening to a show. You had somebody had Noam Chomsky on the air, and he was
a while ago now. Yeah,
if you just look at the CIA's own estimate about this situation, they're saying we don't have credible information on weapons of mass destruction. We should wait. We should be cautious. If he does have them, we shouldn't go in there because there's a likelihood that he would use them.
Right, but in that photograph of George Tenet on page one, you saw a look of disgust. David, let us pick that up. Robert Dreyfus, how about it? A willing partner in the whole push toward war, a disgusted partner, a prisoner? How do you see George Tenet?
We can get lost trying to psychoanalyze poor Mr. Tenet. I think one thing we haven't talked about is that within weeks after 9/11, the Pentagon created its own little rump intelligence unit and brought in a couple of people, one of whom came directly from the American Enterprise Institute, David Wormser.
And wasn't even quiet about it. They said, we're doing this because Donald Rumsfeld wants to get to the bottom of what's going on, doesn't trust the CIA, essentially.
Well, they said that after it came out that this unit existed, but it was actually created quite secretly.
Okay.
And it was created to cherry-pick little bits and pieces of intelligence from the vast mound of intelligence that was available to confirm their existing rationale for going to war. And this unit began in October of 2001, and it snowballed and snowballed for the next, nearly 2 years. And it became the vehicle for creating the talking points that went from this unit to the senior officials at the Pentagon and the White House and in Dick Cheney's office who got to talk about the connections that Saddam had to al-Qaeda, which, of course, were non-existent, or the connections that he had to weapons of mass destruction that was non-existent, and other things, too. And so, the Chalabi story, the Ahmed Chalabi Iraqi National Congress part of this is just one small bit. But this was a counterpole that really signaled to the whole intelligence community what the quarterback at the White House wanted to do. And that's where Tenet, not necessarily a willing participant, but certainly joined in the party.
Bob Baer, how do you see that? Mark Riebling talked about Pentagon hegemony in intelligence being expanded during George Tenet's final years here. Robert Dreyfus talking about Pentagon cherry-picking inside the CIA in the ranks. Do they feel the pressure, the hot breath of the Pentagon kind of horning in on their work, or does it only happen at the very top?
No, I felt that before I left the CIA. Under John Deutsch, we were very much subservient to the Pentagon. For instance, I was assigned to Sarajevo, and our entire mission there was to support the Pentagon, and rather stupid stuff that didn't add to the understanding of what was happening in Bosnia. But more than that, John Deutsch gave away responsibility for the satellites, which is key in the intelligence wars.
Mm-hmm.
That went to the Pentagon. The National Security Agency belongs to the Pentagon, and in the 90s, the Defense Human Services was set up as a rival to the CIA, and it was the Defense Human Services that processed much of this information at the behest of the Pentagon that was coming from Chalabi. So you're seeing the CIA get hit from all sides. The only thing that Tenet really retained was analysis, but he had to include Pentagon analysis as well. And that's then we got the whole question of this special unit in the Pentagon, which was what they're calling data mining, which is basically channel surfing. If you don't like the intelligence you're getting from the CIA, go somewhere else.
Or cherry picking. Bob Baer, let me ask you, why is it that the CIA that, at one time was thought of as so powerful, how did it become so vulnerable to this kind of encroachment by the Pentagon?
It happened in the 70s when the Pike and Churchill committees, their investigations were misinterpreted. You had CIA directors were more interested in pleasing the president than producing intelligence. But the real thing that really hurt was the Rick Ames scandal, the spy for Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody said, look, here's a guy that drives his Jaguar to work, has a huge house, has millions of dollars. They had no idea where it came
from. And they couldn't see that.
And then that's when the FBI got in the act. So you had the place hit from all sides, and then you had the CIA that wanted to be, a good guy in town, politically correct. And a lot of the case officers were just allowed to retire, and the place shrunk to nothing. And this isn't all Clinton's fault. I mean, this went on before while I was there, and you had an aging workforce that didn't want to take risks.
And became a kind of rubber stamp. Let's get one more call here. Matthew's calling from Quincy, Massachusetts. Hi, Matthew. You're on the air.
Hello. Just before your break, you paused and asked if Bush is done at this point, if Tenet's resignation does the trick.
Yeah.
And I'd like to know, tying all from there to here, tying it all together, I'd like to hear your panel give some sort of functional analysis of that. On the one hand, he's elected without a mandate and is now having difficulty pulling all of this intelligence that the Pentagon controls to bear to convince the country that war was just. He seems to be failing. I want to know, will Tenet get him off the hook, or will he not? And does your panel see this as his own fault, I guess, with all that he can pull together?
Let us pick it up. Our time is short, but thanks for your call, Matthew. What about it, Robert Dreyfus? It's a big political question, but does George Tenet going get George Bush off the hook? And more than that, Stansfield Turner, former CIA chief under Jimmy Carter, now advising John Kerry, a Democratic challenger to President Bush. But he said today that this is too significant a move at too important a time. Stansfield Turner said, I think he's being pushed out, however the president wants to present it. What do you make of the political dynamic here, Robert Dreyfus?
I don't know, but I don't think he was pushed out. And I think it's really going to be damaging to Bush because it's a crack in his team. It's a key player leaving in the middle of a war. I mean, you have a war on terrorism that's an infinite duration that's going on. And so it's a crack in Bush's team. It could lead to others. And it also is going to raise a lot more questions, than otherwise would have even been raised, especially with all these new investigations about to be unleashed. So,
but when those reports come out, can't President Bush say, well, yes, I see that, and that was under George Tenet's watch, and now George Tenet is gone, so we're good?
I don't think so. I think that the president is in free fall right now. The polls are showing that people have pretty much lost confidence in him, at least in regard to the war in Iraq and increasingly in regard to the war on terrorism. It was this terrible mistake they made last week about Ashcroft announcing that we were under imminent threat of attack and the Homeland Security Department didn't even know about it. I mean,
the same day Tom Ridge is saying we're fine. Yeah.
Yeah. We question their intelligence about Iraqi WMD. Where are they getting this intelligence from about the terrorism threat? Is that coming from Ahmed Shalabi too? I mean, I don't know what kind of threat we're under, but I certainly don't believe John Ashcroft.
Robert Baer, we've just got a few seconds left. Let me ask you, with this, do you see the CIA poised for a comeback? If there's been some discrediting of George Tenet on this count, maybe on the Pentagon, is it time for a turnaround?
We've got to find a president serious about reforming the place. I haven't seen one so far.
John Kerry?
I haven't heard anything from him that would suggest that.
A problem bigger than that. Robert Baer, always great to have you. Thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Robert Baer, CIA case officer and the Directorate of Operations from 1976 to 1997, author of See No Evil, the true story of a ground soldier in the CIA's war on terrorism. And Robert Dreyfus, great to have you tonight. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Robert Dreyfus, Washington freelance journalist, contributing editor to The Nation, The American Prospect, and Mother Jones. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. During the past few weeks, On Point has been airing excerpts from college commencement speeches around the country. We've heard from a diverse cast of speakers, Bono, Ken Burns, and President Bush. Last Saturday, Bill Clinton stepped to the podium for a little pomp and circumstance. The former president delivered the keynote address at the Cornell University commencement ceremonies in Ithaca, New York. Before 21,000 people, graduating students, and proud families, the 42nd president called for a foreign policy that would make more friends and fewer terrorists. Here are excerpts from Bill Clinton's remarks.
This is a time when we need to, in President Lincoln's words, think anew so that we can act anew. You know what I believe from what I said. I believe the role of government should be to create the conditions and give people the tools, all people, to make the most of their own lives. I believe we should do more to fight terror. I believe we should do more on homeland defense. I think we should check more than 5% of the containers that come into our ports and airports for chemical and biological and small-scale nuclear weapons. I think we should spend more money with the Russians and others to try to contain the biological and chemical stocks around the world that could get into the wrong hands. But if you live in a world where you cannot kill, occupy, or imprison all your actual or potential adversaries, then you have to make a deal. You have to try to build a world with more friends and fewer terrorists. That is the purpose of politics, to bring people together when they cannot control each other and they must work together. There is an honest and intellectually respectable disagreement in America today about whether we should use this moment of unrivaled military, economic, and political superiority to go out and get rid of the bad guys in the world, or whether instead we should use this moment to build better frameworks of partnership so we'll be more likely to cooperate, and when we are no longer the only military, political, and economic superpower in the world, we'll be treated in a way we'd like to be treated. It is an honest disagreement. It's obvious what side I'm on. I believe we should cooperate whenever we can and act alone when we're forced to. Others believe we should act alone whenever we can and cooperate when that's all that works. I believe, but I say again, their view has a lot of adherence and respectable intellectual support. I just think it's wrong because, again, I will say, if you look all over the world, if you look at the Middle East, if you look at Northern Ireland, if you look at the Balkans, if you look at the tribal wars in Africa, if you look at every place there's a problem, rooted in religious, racial, ethnic, or tribal difference, aggravated in some places by the presence of powerful conventional or unconventional weapons, you find that almost always, the only sensible solution is a cooperative one across the lines that divide.
Former President Bill Clinton speaking last Saturday at Cornell University's commencement. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.